From KALW News in San Francisco, I'm Ben Trefney with a special Squeezebox edition of Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Downtown.
OTL.
Pittsburgh.
P-World.
Oakland.
Corona Heights, San Francisco.
Coming up, it's Squeezebox Stories, a musical and social history of the accordion. We'll visit Zydeco dance halls, Mexican Norteño clubs, punk rock apprentices, and Arabic master musicians, all to discover what's behind the surprisingly wide appeal of this ultimate people's instrument.
For the accordion, that's the only instrument you hug. It becomes part of your body. When I carry my accordion, all my shyness goes away.
The accordion, it's not just that it's been in different hands or played differently by different people. It's been the meeting place. It's been the crossroads.
And man, that sound just hits you.
Marco Werman from PRI's The World hosts a documentary produced by KALW's Julie Kane. It's a musical journey with the accordion today on Cross Currents.
Every August for more than 20 years, a shady park in a rural Northern California town gets transformed into a meeting place for people from all walks of life. They all come together for one reason: the annual Cotati Accordion Festival.
Okay, boys and girls, everybody involved, get out there and play!
I'm Marco Werman of PRI's The World, and you're listening to Squeezebox Stories, a musical and social history of the accordion.
In my view, you mentioned the accordion, and it's immediately this assumption that it's just going to be 48 hours of polka music.
But that's not true. In many ways, the accordion is the first global instrument.
It is one of the few instruments that bridges the gap between all borders. Cajun Zydeco, Cajunto for Mexican music. In China, also very big. They're huge in their accordion. Japan, they love the accordion. The Swedes, the Germans, the Russians.
Pirates and gypsies, seafaring folk.
We'll be making four stops on our accordion tour of California. Our guides are radio producer Julie Kane and ethnomusicologist and accordion player Marie Abe. But first, let's take a tour of the accordion itself. On a basic level, an accordion is just a couple of big harmonicas inside a wooden box. They make sounds when air gets pushed and pulled over their reeds by the instrument's lungs, the bellows. Accordions come in many variations. Some squeeze boxes use piano keys for melody. Others use buttons. But no matter what they look like, the right hand always plays melody, and the left hand always works the accompaniment and chords, hence the word accordion. The squeeze box is still a baby in the musical world. The first patent for an instrument called accordion was made in Austria in 1829. Production soon spread to Germany and Italy. The accordion was a child of the Industrial Revolution. Mass production made them affordable, and the instrument quickly became popular all over Europe. Accordions were easy to play and easy to carry. That meant you could bring a bit of home with you wherever you went, kind of like a 19th century version of the iPod.
It was a walking jukebox as far as people were concerned, and it's uniquely suited to talk about not only where you came from, but where you're going.
That's George Lipsitz. He's a sociology professor at the University of California, Santa Barbara. He'll be coming along with us on this musical journey.
The accordion is not only a musical instrument, it's also an instrument of socialization. It's an instrument of assimilation. It's an instrument of upward mobility.
In the late 19th century, European immigration to America was booming. One of the places those immigrants came was San Francisco, and they brought their accordions along with them. Italian immigrants made the city an early hub of accordion manufacturing in the United States, which helped the instrument flourish in the first half of the 20th century. But when rock and roll hit the scene, the accordion fell from grace, deemed corny and uncool. Long the butt of many jokes, the accordion is now enjoying a renaissance in the city that helped make it popular. So our first stop is San Francisco. In fact, the accordion is San Francisco's official city instrument. Julie Kane has this story of an unlikely pair of accordion enthusiasts.
Skylar
Fell plays her accordion in a warehouse in San Francisco, surrounded by instruments and tools. Fell is tattooed and pierced. A feather sticks up from the fedora she wears, cocked to one side. Bones and springs and bits of copper wire are woven into her dreadlocked hair. She has her own accordion repair business here, and it's flourishing.
Okay, so your total is going to be $490. We have everybody from 4, 5, 6 years old. Their parents are bringing them in. We have folks in their 80s getting their accordions that they've had for their entire lives rebuilt. We have a lot of people in their teens, 20s, and 30s coming in right now and getting involved in playing accordion. We're very busy. It's happening.
But she's still got a lot to learn. So she's learning her craft the old-fashioned way. She's apprenticing. 2 or 3 times a week, Fell gets into her rickety pickup truck and drives to meet up with her mentor.
Kind of like old world music making meets Mad Max Road Warrior. Hi, Vince. Morning. How are you doing this morning?
Okay.
Excellent.
Vince Cirelli is in his 90s. His parents were Italian immigrants, and Cirelli grew up in San Francisco's North Beach neighborhood, surrounded by accordion factories. He's been building and repairing them since he was 10 years old.
I started as a shop boy at one of the accordion shops at Colombo Company.
Over the years, Cirelli slowly worked his way up to become a master craftsman. The need for apprenticing comes from the complexity of the instrument. Accordions come in all shapes and sizes. They can have as many as 4,000 parts. Some have buttons, some have piano keys, and depending on the year they were made and who made them, the reeds might be different, the number of keys might be different, and even what they're made of can be different.
So go ahead and take the tools out of there and put them on your bench.
In Cirelli's workshop, Fell and her mentor bend over an accordion lit by a bright light.
Now, let's see.
Tidy rows of tools line both sides of the table.
And it's just having one leak up here on the treble tone chamber.
What note is?
It's F sharp, the high F sharp right here.
All right, we're going to find out why.
When Vince is teaching me, he's very slow and deliberate.
Scott, would you lift this first?
Mm-hmm.
And this will tell me that the tone chamber valve is not leaking. Wait, it is. I don't want it to go to her head, but I will recommend her over many, many repair people because she's learning the itty-bitties of discipline and know-how. Let me hear it now.
Okay.
Just lift it. Now I see what I have to do.
Looking inside an accordion, you see rows of tiny compartments made of wood and beeswax and leather.
Do you want me to clean it?
Yeah, clean it a little bit off here.
Okay. You're using all your senses. You're using your sense of feeling and touching it, and you're also using your sense of your sight and looking at what the project that you're working on, and then you're also using your ears and hearing how each of the notes sound.
Lift again, babe. When you're working in an accordion shop on repairs, your patience is golden.
This really does resemble surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're accordion doctors.
Fell is in her 30s and Cirelli's in his 90s. But even though there's a 60-year difference in their ages, they're bonded by a deep love for the instrument. Cirelli first heard the siren's call of the accordion in the 1920s as a small boy on the streets of San Francisco.
I was out in the front stairs playing and I heard music coming. Beautiful music coming. I said, gee, I like what I'm hearing.
60 years later, Fell heard an accordion player in a punk rock club in Berkeley and felt that same infatuation.
And I was just like, wow, this is so powerful. I want to do this. Like, I'm going to learn how to play accordion.
And she did. In addition to fixing accordions and teaching other people how to play them, Fell regularly plays gigs with her band, the Hobo Goblins. Part of what's behind the renewed interest in the accordion is availability. Old accordions are getting pulled out of attics and handed down to grandchildren, or sold in flea markets and garage sales. They're pretty and affordable, and they often have a story to tell.
And this kid comes in around lunchtime.
And he said that my aunt and uncle gave me this accordion, I want to sell it.
It was an old accordion, cream-colored and embellished with rhinestones and curlicues.
Vince gets this little twinkle in his eye, you know. And he's like, oh, this is just like the accordion that I used to play a long time ago in the 30s or what have you.
It seemed familiar, but someone had attached a strip of gold celluloid across the front, just above the keyboard.
I started to pull it, and I saw the I on the end. A little bit further, and I saw an L. I says, oh, no. Then I ripped it up, and there's my name.
V. Sorelli, his name on his accordion. Come back to him after, you know, 50 years.
Although Sorelli doesn't play much anymore, he and Fell plan to fix up his old accordion so he can pass it along to his grandchildren. It's a passing of the torch that Fell knows all about.
I think it's bringing new style to the old world charm of the accordion, taking history and taking the culture of the past and bringing it into the present and diving into the future with it. We got the accordion renaissance and accordion revolution happening right here as we speak.
That story about the new accordion revolution was brought to us by Julie Kane. You're listening to Squeezebox Stories. I'm Marco Werman. The revolution is all about making the accordion cool again, undoing the all polka, all the time stigma, and bringing the accordion out of the closet. But what put the accordion in the closet in the first place?
One and two and...
Lawrence Welk was one of the most successful bandleaders and television personalities in the 20th century, the son of first-generation immigrant farmers. Welk didn't learn to speak English until he went to school. In many ways, Welk was a bridge between the old world of the immigrant and the new world of the up-and-coming American middle class. Welk's show typified 1950s American popular culture, and he and his orchestra made the accordion the centerpiece on almost every one of his shows. George Lipsitz.
The Lawrence Welk Orchestra is one of those bands that came out of the Midwest, out of North Dakota in the 1930s and 40s. And of course, there were great black jazz bands that they were copying. And what they did, they smoothed off the rough edges. They toned down the rhythms.
By smoothing off those rough edges, Welk inadvertently made the accordion into a symbol of what was about to be reviled by the revolution in music and culture that was the 1960s.
So it's identified with that kind of whiteness, which is kind of a synonym in our society for something bland, for something too soft, something too smooth.
For some groups of people, though, the accordion never fell from grace. For black Creoles who left Louisiana to settle in California, the sounds of the squeeze box have kept their community together for generations. In fact, California is now home to one of the biggest Zydeco music and dance scenes outside of Louisiana. This is St. Mark's Catholic Church in Richmond, California. To be exact, it's the Social Hall, a bare-bones gymnasium with a wooden floor and basketball hoops at either end. On a makeshift stage, a band is playing. There's a drummer and a man scraping spoons up and down a rub board, a kind of metallic washboard that hangs off his shoulders like a piece of body armor. Next to him, Andre Thierry, a young-looking man wearing a pageboy's cap, wraps his arms around an accordion. Dancers of all ages fill the hall, spinning and stomping and laughing.
85% of the people here are from Louisiana, and they just brought the culture with them.
This is like being with your family, because this is one big extended family.
I've been coming here for years. This young man that's playing the music, Andre Thierry, grandmother and grandfather, they used to bring all the bands from Louisiana here and play the music here.
If you don't recognize the music, it's Zydeco, the music of Creole Louisiana. The first recordings of early Creole music weren't made until the 1920s, but the genre dates back even further. The accordion first arrived in Louisiana in the late 1800s, only about 50 years after it was first invented in Austria. 19th century Louisiana was already a melting pot. Louisiana had been in the hands of the French and the Spanish before becoming part of the United States. African slaves and free people of color mixed with Native Americans, Spaniards, and the French, giving rise to a new language and culture in Louisiana. The Creoles are people of mixed heritage who speak a regional dialect of French. The accordion was quickly picked up by local people because it had something that other instruments could not top: volume. It was loud enough to be heard unamplified over the din of a rollicking house party. The Creoles used the accordion to mix African rhythms with French Cajun lyrics. It wasn't called Zydeco yet. That comes later.
My name's Andre Theory. I play accordion, play Zydeco music. I got it from my family. My family's from Louisiana. Both sides of my family, they migrated out here. Been playing for 20 years now.
Hey, hey, yeah.
My mom's mother, my grandmother, was throwing French dances in Richmond, California.
Starting in the 1940s, black and Creole people from Louisiana began to move. First to Texas, and then on to California, seeking work and opportunity in shipyards and on military bases. But it wasn't until the second wave of Louisiana migrants came west in the 1960s that Zydeco started to take root in California.
My name is Lena Petrie.
I always had cool people call me Mama Lena. They're going to call me on the telephone, hey, Mama Lena. I said, I'm not your mama.
Andre Theory's grandmother, Lena Petrie, only spoke French when she packed up her things and brought her young daughters out to California.
We came on the Greyhound bus.
Mm-hmm. She came to join her husband, Houston Petrie, who, like many Creole migrants, had settled in Richmond, just across the bay from San Francisco.
My people didn't want me to come. They said I would never make it here. I said, yeah, yeah. I said, I'm going to try. I said, if I can't make it, I know my way back here.
Petrie, like those before her, brought her language, food, and music with her. By then, there were enough other Creole people living in Richmond to gather on back porches and living rooms and at church.
And always somebody got a old car in, opening and closing. They didn't know nothing much, man. They make the thing go.
In the late 1960s, Petrie and her husband started holding Zydeco dances at St. Mark's Church, inviting Louisiana musicians to California to perform. Church dances were a great way to raise money for the congregation and a way to bring homesick Louisiana people together.
And everybody was enjoying it. There was some big dance. And the kitchen had some gumbo and red bean and rice, boudin, all that. And I was making all that.
Zydeco was also finding its way to California by another route. Chris Strachwitz, a German immigrant who was a huge fan of black Southern music, lived in Berkeley, just a few miles from Richmond. One of the first artists he recorded for his then-young record label, Arhuli, was bluesman Lightning Hopkins.
So I was in Houston hanging out with Lightning, and one night he said, do you want to go hear my cousin? And I said, who's your cousin? That's Cliff. I said, Cliff who? Cliff Chenier. And we got there, a little beer joint, you know. I remember the rats were huge walking across the street. He was there basically with his accordion on his chest, and he was singing the most low-down blues I've ever heard, but in this weird patois. I had no idea, you know, what he was singing about. But it appealed to me right off because it was just pure low-down blues.
Chenier, a native of Opelousas, Louisiana, started playing accordion in the 1950s for mostly black and Creole crowds in small juke joints in Texas and Louisiana. Strachwitz knew right away that he wanted to record this music and got Chenier into a studio to make a record in 1965.
He just used his brother on the rub board and a drummer, that's all. Just accordion and rub board and drums. And man, that sound just hits you.
Chenier melded the blues and R&B with traditional Cajun and Creole rhythms. This musical mashup was eventually called Zydeco. It became a big hit, and Clifton Chenier started to be called the King of Zydeco. Ethnomusicologist Mark DeWitt.
I've heard many people talk about Clifton who were not from Louisiana, who say that that was the first time they heard an accordion where they weren't reminded of Lawrence Welk. Lawrence Welk was associated with sort of the square crowd and not at all hip or cool. But Clifton was cool. The fact that he could be cool and play the accordion at the same time was really a head-turner for a lot of people.
Andre Theory's grandma, Lena Petrie, already knew Clifton was cool. When he started to make it big enough to tour, she invited him to come up to play the church dances she was throwing at St. Mark's. Whenever Chenier came to town, he stayed at her house in Richmond.
Clifton was the regular one. Every time you come to my house.
And that's where Clifton Chenier met a very young Andre Theory. Theory loved meeting the musicians and spent as much time as he could at his grandma's house.
So he wanted to be where the musician was. And one day, we was all sitting. I have a long porch. We was sitting on there, and Clifton was sitting on there.
Sitting on that porch one day, Chenier took a good look at Theory. He touched the young child's arms and told Petrie that her grandson was going to be a great accordion player.
I've been seeing accordion all my life. Actually, my grandmother would have one in her closet. I would sneak and play it. More and more, I went to the dances. I fell in love with the accordion, not really the music, but the accordion. Now I love the music, but I mean, the accordion is what kind of fascinated me because I wanted to make it do whatever it was doing. So I learned all by ear and just watching people, but mostly by ear and records.
And he started playing, me and my husband was sitting on the porch one day. And my husband said, honey, he said, I think Andre play something. I said, Andre ain't playing nothing. Yeah, he played. So I listened. Yeah, he was. I remember the waltz. I don't know if Andre played that no more. The waltz was Marty Rose. And so Houston said, boy, come down here and play that for me.
Now in his 30s, Theory makes his living as a Zydeco musician, playing at churches and dance halls all over Louisiana and Northern California.
Andre Theory, everybody, and Zydeco Magic.
No matter how far we go, when we hear this music, it brings us home.
connection to home has kept Zydeco music vibrant and alive, both inside and outside the Creole community. Nowadays, Zydeco is popular everywhere, from California to Germany to Japan. You can even go on special Zydeco-themed cruise ships. The scene that developed has brought people together from all walks of life. George Lipsitz.
The accordion, it's not just that it's been in different hands or played differently by different people. It's been the meeting place. It's been the crossroads. It's been the nexus where fused cultures were created.
And those cultures are as diverse and unexpected as accordions themselves. You're listening to Squeezebox Stories, a musical and social history of the accordion. I'm Marco Werman. We'll be right back after this break.
Ah, the cliché.
And the world is your oyster.
They really put the cart before the horse.
This was a smoking gun.
It seems like it's everywhere. On the news.
Is this game of political football going to hurt the Democrats in the end?
From politicians.
There is no silver bullet that can bring down gas prices right away.
But not here on Cross Currents from KALW News. Tune in to our local news magazine weekdays at 5 for the anti-cliché. We'll throw stuff at you you've never heard before. Like this.
I had a patient who was absolutely cured by blueberry juice.
Or this.
For now, what we want is the gooey, goopy form of life.
And we'll spare you drivel like this.
A tool in our toolbox.
Path of least resistance.
The bottom line.
Ugh, give me some more of that good stuff.
I believe that people who listen to radio are quality people.
That's what I'm talking about. Check us out weekdays at 5. We're Cross Currents on KALW 91.7.
Welcome back. You're listening to Squeezebox Stories, a musical and social history of the accordion. I'm Marco Werman. So far, we've heard about the accordion in Europe and the United States, but the accordion's reach goes well beyond the Western world. China is now the largest manufacturer of accordions in the world, and in Africa, you can hear the accordion in places like Madagascar and Zanzibar, where European missionaries and colonialists brought the instruments in the late 19th century. The accordion is also huge in the Middle East. It's become an essential part of Arabic music in countries like Egypt, Syria, and Lebanon. But to play Arabic music on the accordion, the instrument must first be physically altered. That's because the accordion's reeds were designed for Western music that has 12 notes or pitches in an octave. Arabic music, on the other hand, has 24 pitches in an octave. Let's hear what the difference sounds like. Here's a Western scale. And here's an Arabic scale. Hear the difference? Let's go back and listen to the first three notes. Western. Arabic. That third note in the Arabic scale doesn't exist on the Western keyboard. It's right between a white key and a black key. What's happening is that Arabic music splits the step between the black and white keys in half. That's why there are twice as many notes in an Arabic octave. They call these in-between notes quarter tones. The result is a music with dozens of scales, or maqams, as they're called in Arabic, capable of a wide range of emotional expression. California has the largest number of Arab Americans in the United States. On our next stop, producer Marie Abe tracked down one of the few Arabic accordion players in California, a man who not only performs for the Arab community, but also reaches out to a wider audience, building a new kind of accordion community in the process.
3, 4. Okay. I want to feel it, the same breath.
Elias Lamam stands in the middle of a makeshift music studio. His dark hair is swept back from his forehead, and his eyes shine with intensity. He claps his hands and sings to a circle of students. All of them are playing accordions of various shapes and sizes. There is no sheet music. This is a beginner class for the Arabic accordion. The students, all adults, struggle with buttons, keys, and bellows.
They follow Lamam in a form of call and response. He sings, and they reply. Lamam is one of a handful of professional Arabic accordionists living in the United States, and many Arabic music experts agree that he's one of the best in the country. He's bringing a deep knowledge about his music to his students, none of whom are Arab.
How do you get that balance, though, between paying attention to where everybody else is so that you can blend in with them?
You have to feel the music, the line you're playing. You know, sometimes you cannot explain things you feel, and that's music.
So are you going to make my dream become true? Okay. Okay. Three.
إنما الناس سطور كتبت لكن بما
See, you made my dream happening.
Very good. Lamam came to California from his native Lebanon 10 years ago. He has an intimate and emotional relationship with the accordion.
I consider myself a shy person. So the accordion, I felt that's the only instrument you hug. Basically, it's hiding behind the accordion, and the accordion do the talk. You know what I mean? So when you hug the accordion, it becomes part of your body. So when I carry my accordion, all my shyness goes away. I feel like I'm a totally different person. I feel like, you know, I'm strong. I could talk, I could say whatever I want to say during my instrument.
His older brother George was originally meant to be the family accordionist. As a young child, Lamam often sat in on his brother's accordion lessons.
I was in love with that instrument the moment, you know, he started playing. You know, we think as a musician that we pick the instrument, but the truth is that the instruments pick us.
One afternoon, the music teacher told George to take a 5-minute break. The two left Elias alone in the room with the accordion, which he picked up and started to play. The teacher heard his talent right away. Lamam went on to study Arabic accordion for 13 years before he came to the United States. For him, the accordion isn't just an accessible people's instrument, but a prestigious classical instrument.
I hate squeezing Bach's word. It's not. We spend our life studying that instrument, and then zero IQ come tell you, you know, this is a squeeze box. This instrument takes lifetime practicing, and then you find somebody saying that, you know what, your instrument is a squeeze instrument. Okay, put some lemon inside and have some lemon juice.
No matter what you call it, the accordion is a recent arrival to the Middle East. It was first introduced in the 1930s during a tango craze that swept through the region. The sound of the accordion was the sound of Europe in the Middle East. Egyptian composers quickly started integrating the accordion into their music, giving rise to a new sound in both popular and classical Arabic music. It's big in Egyptian belly dancing music. And it's a major part in classical Arabic songs.
The Arabic tunes are amazing. Something magical.
That magic lies in a more complex system of pitches and scales than we use in Western music. Remember quototones? Those pitches that occur between the black and white keys on the piano keyboard? These notes are what make up the many variations of scales that make Arabic music so expressive.
For example, I'm gonna play a scale, we called it the saddest. It's very sad. You feel like sad when you hear that scale. We called it Saba in Arabic. You can feel somebody's in pain, you know what I mean? And it ends like, ah.
That's what a quarter tone can do. But Western accordions aren't built to produce those sounds. In order to play their own music, Arabic accordion players have to change the guts of the instruments themselves.
When we tune the accordion, it's like you're doing a surgery. You have to open the accordion, go inside the accordion to the reeds. And here it comes the tricky part in the, and makes it the Arabic accordion really hard to play on because we don't have enough keys.
The piano keys that are used to play the instrument are still designed for Western music. So to compensate, players not only retune the reeds, they also have to be very subtle and precise about how they use the bellows. For Western music, a key on the piano accordion will play the same note whether you push the bellows in or out. In Arabic music, however, some keys will play one note when you're pushing the bellows in, and then another note when you're pulling the bellows out.
Pulling in, pulling out. See that? There is no chance to do a mistake. You'll be totally in different scale.
Lamam is a technical master. Every bellow move, every touch, every reed matters. In fact, the Arabic accordion requires technical mastery. It's the key to unlocking the poetry of the Arabic scales. Today, the accordion is an essential ingredient in many forms of Arabic music. And the person who really popularized the accordion in Arabic music is the legendary Lebanese singer, Fairuz. Fairuz's late husband, Asi Rahbani, wrote songs for her that featured that retuned Arabic accordion, spreading that sound all over the Middle East. His compositions brought together many modern and traditional musical styles into what has become a pan-Arab phenomenon.
You can hear Fairuz any time of day, morning, lunch, you know. Let's say 95% of the Lebanese, if he's driving, there's Fairuz in the car. If he's in the coffee shop, there is Fairuz singing there. Everybody starts his day with Fairuz singing.
And it's the Fairuz pieces that Lamam uses to help his students grapple with the emotional and technical complexity of the music.
All right, so let's go to Habbaytak Bissayf. Habbaytak Bissayf, that's also a Fairuz piece. Means Habbaytak Bissayf, I love you in summer, I love you in winter. So season doesn't make me change. All right. Yes, from the tippy top.
Thanks to Marie Abe for introducing us to Elias Lamam and his music. You're listening to Squeezebox Stories. I'm Marco Werman. On this journey, we've heard just how adaptable the accordion is and how quickly it's become central to all kinds of musical genres and traditions. We've explored some of the practical reasons behind the accordion's wide reach across cultures and borders and continents. And above all, we've seen how the accordion truly is an immigrant's instrument, a vehicle for giving people a voice in a new land. George Lipsitz, professor of sociology at the University of California, Santa Barbara.
Witnesses have to speak. Testimony has to be heard. People can't remain totally silent. But they often don't have citizenship. They don't have the English language. They don't have the ability to write. They work with the tools that are open to them in the arenas that they can access. And so an instrument like the accordion, which is an incredible repository of memory, and it's an incredible storehouse of many different emotions and many different ways of thinking about the world, is a logical form to express those contradictions of immigrant life. La joya,
in many parts of the United States, when you scan the radio, you're very likely going to hear something like this. Aquí estoy establecido. This is Norteño music, and it's a big part of mainstream Mexican culture in the United States. Flashy button accordions are always a centerpiece, and it's what many people from Mexico listen to. The face of Mexican immigration is changing, however, and the music is changing along with it. The latest wave of immigrant farm workers in California are indigenous people from the southern Mexican state of Oaxaca. Many of this most recent wave of immigrants don't even speak Spanish as their first language. Producers Julie Kane and Marie Abe went to California's Central Valley in search of a new kind of accordion music. Escuchen mi acordeón. Ahora, al ritmo de chilena.
Hi, I am Carlos Mendoza. I live in Madera, California, in Central Valley. I come from Oaxaca, Mexico, and I play accordion.
Like many Oaxacan people, Mendoza has been migrating in search of work most of his life, first within Mexico and later in the United States. He came to California about 15 years ago to work in the fields. Now in his 50s, Mendoza is short and stout, with a broad smile and an easy laugh.
Soy músico yo por convicción.
I am a musician by conviction.
Desgraciadamente no fuimos a la escuela porque éramos muy pobres en México.
Unfortunately, we didn't go to school because we were really poor in Mexico.
Si hubiera ido a la escuela, hubiera elegido una carrera de músico.
If I had gone to school, I would have studied music.
Si no hubiera ido a la escuela, tomo la inquietud de saber qué es.
I didn't go to school for it, but I had this desire inside me to know what music was.
Es algo que se trae dentro de uno.
It's something that a person just carries inside himself.
Mendoza lives in the small town of Madera, California, in a house he shares with his wife and seven children. In the garage, right next to the washer and dryer, Mendoza has built a music studio. It's like a sanctuary where he records music, produces CDs for all kinds of Mexican bands, and gives music lessons. Musical instruments are everywhere. There are guitars, a bajo sexto, a saxophone, a bass, a drum kit. Mendoza knows how to play them all. But his prized possessions are two ornate, rhinestone-encrusted Gabinelli button accordions.
These are my moneymakers.
One is white and the other is red with blue and green bellows. Mendoza picks up the white one and straps it onto his body.
This one is La Tortuguita. It was the first one I ever learned.
La Tortuguita, or the Little Turtle, is a style of music called the Chilena. Chilena music is itself a traveling music, an immigrant's music. The story goes that it came to the coast of Oaxaca with Peruvian and Chilean sailors who stopped there on their way to seek their fortunes in the California gold rush. The indigenous people who met them there picked up the beat and mixed it with their own traditional music and dance. They named the new genre Chilena after the Chilean sailors who brought it. But the music has a very Oaxacan sound.
En Oaxaca tenemos muchas regiones. Somos muchas regiones.
In Oaxaca, we have many regions.
Pero una cosa nos une a todos los oaxaqueños, que todos tenemos.
But there is one thing that unites all Oaxacans.
Todos nos identificamos por ese tipo de música.
We all identify ourselves with this kind of music.
The Chilena is now a mainstay of Oaxacan musical culture. Traditionally, it's played on string or brass instruments, but never on the accordion. Y así se baila mi chilena.
hasta impensable que el acordeón pudiera incorporarse.
It was unthinkable that the accordion could be part of our music.
El acordeón es un símbolo de música norteña.
Because the accordion is a symbol of Norteño music.
Cuando yo tenía 20 años y quería tocar este tipo de música en mi tierra.
When I was 20, I wanted to play this kind of music where I'm from.
Así me corrían a patadas.
They almost kicked me out of the town.
You might have to be Oaxacan or at least Mexican to understand why this is such a big deal. Like Native Americans in this country, indigenous Oaxacans have long been the object of discrimination in Mexico, and the discrimination travels with them. Their small stature and dark skin set them apart from other Mexicans. Language is another factor. More than 17 distinct dialects like Mixteco and Zapoteco are spoken in indigenous communities in Oaxaca and next door in the state of Guerrero. The accordion was a foreign instrument to Oaxacan musical culture until very recently. And what's more, inside Mexico there are strong regional rivalries, so mixing the music of the South with an instrument of the North would have been unheard of. Sort of like putting ketchup on a sushi roll. But migration to the United States has changed the rules of the game. As Oaxacans have pushed northward looking for work, they've carried their beloved Chilena music along with them. And as they've passed through the accordion-dominated border region, they've picked up a new instrument. That instrument, the accordion, is one of the biggest symbols of Mexican identity in the United States.
Muy buenos días, paisanos, paisanas, buenos días.
My name is Filemón López. I come from San Juan Mixtepec, Oaxaca.
Filemón López is the host of a radio show called La Hora Mixteca, or The Mixtec Hour.
Hora Mixteca. En este programa, los paisanos radicados en el norte.
It's a weekly radio program on Radio Bilingüe that's a mix of talk show, music program, and a message service for friends and family separated by the border. Many of Oaxaca's native languages and musical styles can be heard on his program. His radio show broadcasts all over the United States and Mexico.
La música es como un reflector. Cultural.
Music is like a cultural reflector.
La música es parte de nosotros.
I would say that music is part of us.
La música es cultura.
Music is culture.
La música es recordar.
Music is remembrance.
La música es gozar.
Music is joy.
La música
music,
chilena, por
the
ejemplo,
chilena, for example, is the music that our ancestors danced to.
Siguen bailando de cierto
and
lado
we
de la
keep
frontera.
Dancing it on this side of the border.
In fact, says Lopez, up until recently, traditional indigenous music had no outlet on the Mexican airwaves. He had to come to the United States to start broadcasting his native music back to the state of Oaxaca.
Prohibido hablar.
It was prohibited to speak indigenous languages on Mexican commercial radio.
The ability to express this cultural pride is a big part of what playing the Chilena is all about. Carlos Mendoza.
Fíjate mi cara, yo conservo mis rasgos indígenas porque mi raza no se dejó dominar.
Look at my face. I still have my indigenous features because my people didn't let themselves be dominated by Spaniards.
Para que yo naciera güero de ojos azules.
That's why I wasn't born a white man with blue eyes.
Mi raza no se dejó, mi raza peleó.
My people didn't allow them to do it. My people fought.
Mendoza just finished producing a CD for a local Oaxacan band called Los Yukinos. They're young men, field workers by day, musicians by night. Like most bands, Los Yukinos want to make it big. So they play a mix of Mexican popular music, norteños and rancheras and corridos. But they also play chilenas on accordion and sometimes even sing in Mixteco. Tonight, Los Yukinos are playing at a club in Fresno, and Mendoza has arranged for us to meet them before their gig. At the club where they're playing, a sweet-faced young man in a black cowboy hat, sparkling white cowboy boots, and a tailored western jacket gets out of a black SUV, smiling broadly at us. He's the accordion player.
Yeah, my name is Patricio Vasquez, and I play the accordion in the grupo Los Yukinos, and we're in Fresno, California. We're right here and playing the Mexican music. It's norteño y un poco de chilenas.
Inside the club, a big dance floor is surrounded by shiny mirrors, red lights, and the reflections of a spinning disco ball. It's Saturday night, and people are here to dance. The women wear high heels and short skirts. Almost all the men wear pristine cowboy hats, perfect jeans, and dressy cowboy boots with very pointy toes. On the stage, Los Yukinos play a chilena, and Patricio Vasquez sings in Mixteco. The accordion is front and center, its red and green bellows expanding and contracting rapidly, rhinestones glittering under the flashing lights. But this is not a Oaxacan crowd. Perhaps not familiar with the Mixtec language and chilena music, the crowd stays seated and silent for the song. It's not until Los Yukinos switch to a norteño set that couples get up to dance. Hands on waist, cowboy boots tapping, high heels twirling, they dance in a jumpy two-step. In this club, we're seeing a real straddling of cultures and identities. To appeal to a mainstream audience, Los Yukinos have adopted the instruments and musical styles of the dominant Mexican culture. But they've also brought their own traditional language and rhythms onto the stage with them. And they're doing all of this in the context of a new country, the United States.
Thanks to Julie Kane for taking us on that accordion journey from Mexico to California's Central Valley. Here's George Lipsitz.
Accordion's a great instrument. It's a great musical instrument. It's a great social instrument. But you can only play what comes out of your life, what makes meaning for you. It's not the instrument that is doing the work. It's the culture that flows through this instrument. So, you know, the accordion is not the end, it's the means, it's not the objective, it's the vehicle, but it's an amazing vehicle.
And through this amazing vehicle, we've heard old memories and new expressions that have emerged as people moved across the world with the accordion. In the sound of the squeeze box, we can hear distant places, hidden histories, and unexpected encounters that span generations, languages, and musical styles. We're about to bring our show to a close, but the squeeze box stories don't have to end with this hour. We know there are a lot of stories still out there. Perhaps there's a dusty accordion hiding in your basement, or maybe there's a new accordion revolution happening in your neighborhood as we speak. Whatever the story, we'd love to hear about it. You can share your story, replay this hour, and learn more about the accordion at squeezeboxstories.com. Squeezebox Stories was produced by Julie Kane and Marie Abe. The editor was Loretta Williams. The mix engineer was Robin Wise of Sound Imagery. Funding was provided by the California Council for the Humanities in partnership with the Skirball Foundation. Sponsorship was provided by the Arhuli Foundation. Thanks also to Deborah George, George Lipsitz, Mark DeWitt, Scott Marcus, Josh Kuhn, Alejandro Madrid, and all the great accordion players and enthusiasts who helped make this project possible. I'm Marco Werman. Thanks for listening to Squeezebox Stories, a musical and social history of the accordion.